On the contrary, he has helped me to wake up and become conscious. The memory seized me powerfully, and the hazy pictures I had been carrying inside myself without being able to bring them into conscious focus suddenly became sharp and clear. New pictures emerged into my consciousness, new memories which had been lying hidden and buried in the depths of my subconscious. Now, fitting together like the stones in a mosaic, they formed the perfect picture of a past life in a land beside the great river, the Nile, in the land of the pyramids. The memory pictures came ever more alive, while the impressions of my present life gradually paled, turning over their place to the reawakened consciousness of a person I once was. The environment in which I sat, the simple little room in the house in the forest, the beautiful view out over the river in the valley, disappeared bit by bit. And he too was nowhere to be seen. The room opened and spread out about me. I found myself in a great hall, in my own chamber, and I became aware of a fat and lovable woman smiling at me joyously. "Yes, of course. Today is my 16th birthday, and I am just putting on my festive robes. I am to wear them at the great reception in which my father is to present me to the representatives of the country as his wife, successor to the queen who died an early death. In a great oval silver plate which has been hammered and polished with loving care and high art, I see my own figure, my own picture, and I watch my dear old Menu as she dresses me. My mother died while I was still very young, and I have only a vague memory of how pale she was. And how fine. In the treasure chest of my precious recollections, I still see her great, sad eyes as she took her last long, long look at me before she died. This last, long, loving glance created a contact between us which I still feel within me, and today when I am to be presented to the country as her representative, I feel this contact even deeper, even stronger. Now fully robed and ready, I stand before my mirror and look at my image. I like it. I see a fine, delicate, slender person in a beautiful robe. Scintillating, silken with golden hems. The golden sash about her waist enhances her slenderness, her broad collar emphasizes her shoulders, and the kerchief around her head accentuates the self-confident and superior expression in her face. I am vain, I like what I see in the mirror. And dear, old, warm-hearted Menu, who considers me the most perfect being on earth, can hardly see through the tears of joy welling up in her eyes. The two oldest representatives of the country come and lead me down the long corridor into the great reception hall. With slow, ceremonious steps, they lead me between the rows of people of rank to the great house, to the pharaoh, to my father who is now to be my husband. He sits on a golden throne like an image of God. It is not without reason that his name, Pharaoh, means great house. His person is the outer integument, the house of God. God dwells in him, manifests himself in him, radiates through him. The power of his glance is so penetrating that people who are not completely true are compelled to look aside. He is sitting there looking straight at me, through me. I look back at him fearlessly, engaging his glance with mine. I know the tremendous power radiating from his eyes is the power of love. He sees everything. He sees that I am vain, just as he sees all my other imperfections, but he understands everything. He is love itself. He is my father. A magnificent lion, his lion, sits motionless beside the throne. Majestic and dignified, it is a symbol of the supreme power of the pharaoh. I arrive at the steps to the throne and stand still. The pharaoh rises, comes down, turns to the magnificent jewel box the chamberlain holds out to him, lifts out the most beautiful creation of the goldsmith's craftsmanship, a golden shoulder collar. Picking it up lovingly, he lays it over my shoulders. Then he takes the golden hoop that ends with the head of a serpent and fastens it firmly onto the white silken cloth over my forehead. It is the symbol of the members of the ruling race, the sons of God. It is the symbol of the initiates. Then taking my right hand, the pharaoh leads me up to the throne. We turn to the representatives of the country and the people of rank, and he presents me to them as the representative of the queen, as his wife. We seat ourselves, I to his left, somewhat ahead of him. Now the people of rank with their wives, the eldest among them first, pass by us slowly, and bow low with outstretched arms, first before the pharaoh and then before me. We sit motionless. Only our eyes make contact with each and all as they move by. I think of the fact that I now manifest the spirit of my dear mother, and this makes me aware of my duty and responsibility. The people of rank pass by and I see their souls reflected in their eyes. In some there is real love and respect, in others envy, curiosity or cowardly servility. The Supreme Chamberlain, Ruka, also bows before me. As he has so often done before when I have met him in the palace, he gives me a glance that is somewhat cynical, impertinent, and flatteringly intimate all at the same time. I answer his impertinence with a cold stare, and the procession marches slowly onward. Then I see friends of mine, old and young, some of them former playmates, their faces full of genuine love. I meet their glances with mine, and this union enriches us. Slowly, ceremoniously, all the people pass by us, silently, but united in spirit. The lengthy procession finally comes to an end. The pharaoh stands up and reaches me his hand. Slowly we descend the steps, and, walking between the rows of statesmen and people of rank, leave the room. Leading me into his chamber, my father seats himself, waves me to a seat, and looks at me smilingly for a while in silence. I can see that I am pleasing to him. From head to foot his glance moves over my figure with satisfaction. Then, looking me happily in the eye, he says, "From now on we'll see each other often, for you will take your mother's place and fulfill her duties before the public. For many years we have been preparing you for this task, and you know your duties. I want you to have a happy memory of this day of days, so you may make a wish. You've known for some time that I was going to ask you what you wanted, so tell me now. What is it?" "Yes, I was prepared, and like other young women, I could have had a number of wishes. I could have asked for beautiful jewelry, for I knew I could wear the great festive jewels only on occasions of high ceremony. Or I could have wished to travel, or asked for a young trained lion, or for something else of the sort. But I didn't want any of these things." "Father," I said, "what is the significance of the ornament I am wearing on my head?" The pharaoh looks at my forehead, then into my eyes, then answers, "The golden snake is the symbol of the ruling race, the sons of God." "Yes, father, but it is also the symbol of initiation. I am not worthy to wear it because I haven't been initiated. I want to be initiated. That's the wish I want you to fulfill for me." Father becomes very earnest. "Ask for something else, my child," he says. "You are still very young and not yet mature enough to receive initiation. Tender young sprouts must not be exposed to hot sunshine, otherwise they burn up and can never blossom. Wait till you've acquired the necessary experiences in earthly, physical life. To be initiated now would make your later problems much, much harder for you to solve. Why cause yourself unnecessary troubles? Take my advice and wish for something else." "Father," I answered, "there's nothing else I want. The things other young people like just bore me stiff. Above and beyond all earthly joys I see the wishes of the body. I like beautiful jewels very much, but even gold is a form of matter which is made precious through a manifestation of the spirit, through the work of the artisan. Naturally I enjoy beautiful scenery and new sights when I'm traveling, but I can never forget that this is all creation, not the creator. I should like to experience the highest truth in its reality. I want to learn to know God, the creator himself." "Father, you know that what we call life is only an unreal dream. Here everything slips out of our hand, we can never be definitely happy about anything. Everything is merely a transition between past and future. But I want to experience the eternal present which will never become the past and which was never the future. And I want to find that conditional place which was never there before I reached it, becomes here when I reach it and turns into there again when I go on. I want to experience the eternal present in time and space. Father, I want the highest reality, I want initiation. Even as he listens to me, Father becomes sadder and sadder. Your spiritual awakening has come earlier than it should have, he says. All I can do is to go to my brother Tahotep, the high priest of the temple and the head of our race. I will speak with him, and he will take you under his guidance. May God's eternal light illumine your pathway. He lays his hand upon my head and blesses me. I should like to throw myself upon his breast to thank him for granting my wish, but my heavy golden collar holds me back and keeps me from making any sudden motions. Father, who can read a person's every thought, sees that I wanted to express my joy through this sudden outburst. In one way you are still a big child, he says kindly, and in others you are grown up and mature. You'll have to practice great self-control if you want to be initiated. I answer with a laugh, I already have self-control, Father, when I want it. Yes, I believe you. But do you always want it? He asks with a smile. It's boring to always exercise self-control, Father. That's just the trouble, he replies with a loving nod. There's danger in your finding self-control boring. Just remember, if, even for a second, you do not keep your will directed towards your favorite lion and if he attacks you in this weak moment, you're lost. The low self is just as much an animal in its nature as a lion is. We must keep both of them under constant control, then they serve us with their gigantic strength. Always pay attention. We take leave of each other. He escorts me to the door and turns me over to the two elders waiting in the antechamber. Oh, what a nuisance these ceremonies are. Why do I have to walk in such a slow and dignified manner between these two old men, just to get back to my own room? I'd like to run down the long corridor and burst into my room where my menu will be waiting for me full of excitement and curiosity. But no. I have to walk. With dignity and majesty. So the beautiful golden collar on my shoulders will not slip off askew. Finally we reach my door where, with dignity and majesty, I take leave of the two elders. I walk in and stop inside the doorway so that Menu can admire me in my glittering gold ornaments. She is truly beside herself at the sight of my beauty and my majestic movements and because, as she expresses it, I look so much like my mother. Then I tell her, "Do you see how ignorant you are, Menu? I can't look like anybody else, and I don't like to have you say things like that. My nose or my mouth can perhaps resemble my mother's, but I? Can you ever really see me, the real me, myself? You see only my body, the dwelling place of myself, but you never see myself. How then can I look like somebody else?" "Oh ho," says Menu, "if I can't see you, how come you are so beautiful? Just tell me that. If I can't see you, then what I do see here in front of me and what I consider so beautiful is not really you but merely the dwelling place of yourself, so you are not beautiful at all. Then don't stand there looking so proud and majestic." At this we both burst out laughing. Despite her limited intellect, Menu can often give me such a wise and witty answer that I am ashamed of myself. Yes, she has discovered my weakness, my vanity. Then with infinite tenderness she removes my golden collar and the ornamental band from my head, laying them with tender care in the jewel chest, because the Chancellor, Ruka, is waiting outside with the two ornament bearers to carry these precious works of gold back to the treasure chamber to await the next high ceremony in court. He enters my antechamber and bows before me. This man annoys me, because I see he is not bowing out of respect for me, but because he must. He gives me another saucily intimate look, while I do my best to look as dignified and regal as possible. Then at last I am alone with Menu. Menu became my nurse when my mother died. She was and still is my bodily servant, and I am much more intimate with her than with the ranking ladies of the court who have taken on the duty of bringing me up and educating me. From the bottom of her heart, Menu loves me with such infinite affection that I could do with her whatever I wanted. She has always been absolutely delighted with everything I've ever said or done, and I have never had a wish that she would not fulfill blindly if it was within her power to do so. She was always close to me, or somewhere nearby, and now that I have to take on public duties beside my father, she has started to worry that I might keep her more and more at a distance. But I love her with a boundless confidence because I know and can read in people's eyes that no one else in my father's court loves me so sincerely, so unreservedly, so completely uncalculatingly as Menyu. I saw my father only seldom during my childhood. He was and is a great man in our country. For he came to the earth with the duty of guiding and governing people in their earthly life. He dedicated his life to the task of showing the sons of men how to govern a country in such a way that all its inhabitants can develop happily. This task gave him so much to do that he had very little time left for me. Every day he spent a few minutes in the garden where I was playing with the children of the royal family, or he arranged for me to visit him for a few minutes in his chamber. When I was still quite small, he would pick me up in his arms or crouch down beside me on the floor for a while. Then he would look at me with endless love, bless me and go away. He always spoke to me just as if he were speaking to an adult. In our race, known as the Sons of God, it is not considered important at all whether we have been on earth for a long time or only a short time, or whether a spirit is living here on earth in a still undeveloped body, as a child, or in a developed body, as an adult. This question of size and age is only considered important among the sons of men, who are so closely tied to their bodies and identify themselves with their physical instrument to such an extent that they completely forget their true nature as spirit independent of time and place. The sons of men believe that someone can actually be small or large. But the members of our race, the sons of God, even keep their spiritual consciousness when they are born into their bodies. They never forget that only the body can be a child or an adult and that the spirit is and always remains the same. It is neither big nor small, neither young nor old, for spirit is independent of the world of time and space. This is why my relationship with my father was never disturbed at all by the fact that we were of different ages and seldom saw each other. As I grew older, Father sometimes took me along on his walks, and when I would get tired, he would pick me up and carry me in his mighty arms as he went on talking about all the secrets of nature. I found such discourses of his extremely fascinating, and I once said to him, "Father, I'd like to know so much about everything, just like you do. When you are initiated," he answered, "all the secrets of heaven and earth will be known to you." I never forgot these words of his, and I waited patiently for the time when I too would be initiated. Although I was always living among strange people, I never felt alone because of this. I knew my father understood me completely, and even though we were not near each other physically, I was united with him in spirit, I belonged to him. And in the same way I was united with my mother. She was no longer living in the body, yet I was indissolubly united with her in spirit. It is astounding to realize how little the unity of the spirit depends on physical togetherness. My dear Menyu, for example, is almost always with me, scarcely leaving me alone for a moment, and still I am not with her. She can love me but not understand me. She hardly thinks for herself anymore, and scarcely lives except for me. She lives in me and is completely in my power, even though I do not exploit this situation. Father told me once that one should never abuse the power arising from superiority of the mind. Right now Menyu is as happy as if my father had presented her to the court as his wife, as if she were so beautiful, and as if she had been given my ornaments as a representative of the queen. "Oh, my dear old Menyu." And now, naturally enough, she asks me what wish I asked my father to grant. "Initiation, of course," I reply. "What?" Menyu cries out in horror. "Initiation? You don't mean to say you want to leave the court and join the neophytes in the temple? Why didn't you ask for beautiful jewels? Or to have Imhotep, the artist, make a statue of you? Or anything else, except initiation? Why get so excited? I ask in reply. The one and only thing I want is initiation, and that's all. And how could anything make me happy that is not in me, not myself, but hanging outside on my body so that I don't even see it? I now even own the jewels with which people will someday adorn my body, after I have left it, when they put it into a tomb, so that people may know that I belong to the race of the sons of God. I have these jewels right now, but still don't feel happier in any way than before. And for the same reason people will immortalize my outward form. Why should I wish for such things? Who cares what the sons of men will say a few thousand years from now about the statues of my outward form? The only thing which can make me happy is what is in me, what is identical with me, but not things outside myself. The only thing that can make me truly happy is an inward experience through which, in spite of my earthly body, I can earn the ultimate truth in life. I want to be initiated. Menu groans in desperation, as if I had asked for death itself. Oh, I know, no one can talk to you. When you have your mind set on something, it just has to happen. But I feel initiation is going to bring you into great danger. Don't wish for that. Wish for something else, please. What did the Pharaoh say to your idea? He has given his permission for me to see his brother, Tahotep, and now please stop groaning. Don't spoil the whole day for me. That evening, I leave the palace with Menu. Wearing heavy veils, we walk through the long colonnade from the palace to the temple, on our way to the high priest, my father's brother, the son of God, Tahotep. Tahotep is the highest of all priests. At the same time, however, he is the highest physician and architect, because he knows and masters all the secrets of nature. He has come to earth with the duty and the task of leading the sons of men in their spiritual life and initiating them in the sciences. He stands above father because he never identified himself with his body, whereas father married and thus anchored himself more firmly in the material plane. Without talking, we make our way to the temple. Menu has learned to keep silent when I am withdrawn in thought. A neophyte awaiting us before the temple takes me inside. Menu remains in the antechamber. At the end of another long colonnade, Tahotep awaits me in a little reception room. The neophyte remains outside. There he sits, the representative of God. I see him for the first time close to, and his eyes overpower me. Oh, these eyes! Dark blue, such a deep dark blue that they look almost black. They are so dark because they are bottomless, as endlessly deep as the vault of heaven itself. When one looks into the eyes of the sons of men, one easily sees the bottom. In their eyes, one sees their soul, their whole character. One sees individual eyes. Tahotep's eyes are completely different. These eyes have no bottom at all, and looking at them is like looking into the infinity of the sky on a starry night. In these eyes there is nothing personal, nothing individual, only an endless depth where eternity is at home. The whole world, all creation lies within these eyes. I have recognized myself in these eyes, and from the very first moment felt absolute confidence because I know these eyes know me and contain me within themselves. I know I am in him, and he is in me and loves me as himself because I actually am he and he and I are a complete unity. He is love incarnate, and I feel this infinite love penetrating me, glowing within me. Move to the depths of my being, I fall to my knees before him. Tahotep holds out his hand, raises me to my feet, and says, "My little daughter, never bend your knees before a visible form. Do not humble within yourself the divinity that every living being carries within itself. The same God manifests himself through you, through me and through the entire created world. God alone is the only one before whom you can fall to your knees. Now rise and tell me why you've come." "Father of my soul," I say as I rise, "I want initiation." Tahotep asks, "Do you know what initiation is? What does it mean to you when you say you want to be initiated?" "I don't know exactly what it consists of, but I want to be omniscient. I feel like a prisoner in my body, as if I were feeling my way around in darkness, completely at the mercy of invisible forces I do not know and therefore cannot control. I want to be able to see everything clearly. I want to be all-knowing like you and Father and the other initiates. Tahotep answers, initiation means becoming conscious. You are now conscious to a degree corresponding to the resistance of your nerves and body. When a person becomes conscious to a higher spiritual degree, he automatically guides higher, stronger, more penetrating powers into his body. For this reason, he must also raise the level of resistance of his nerves and body. To achieve the supreme, divinely creative degree of consciousness, while at the same time increasing the resistance of the nerves to the supreme degree in order to be able to endure this divine condition without harm to the body, that's what initiation means. Initiation also entails omnipotence and omniscience. I understand, Father of my soul, and that is just exactly what I am longing for. Tahotep looks at me silently for a time, and I feel his glance going completely through every fiber of my being. Finally he says, you will be initiated, but not now. You are not ready for it yet in every respect. You have not yet learned to control the divinely creative power within your body. And if you make yourself conscious of this power on the spiritual plane before having learned to control it in its physical manifestation, this would mean a very great danger for you. What kind of danger, Father of my soul? There would be the danger of your possibly burning your nerve centers. If you achieve the highest level of spiritual consciousness and thus acquire control over this power, you could do yourself great harm by guiding this power into your lower nerve centers. In this case, your consciousness would sink lower than the level at which it was born in this life. You have no experience yet in the guidance of this power. The awakening of consciousness must begin on the lowest level in the scale of manifestations, because then you will only be guiding into your body power corresponding to the level of your development, that is power your nerves can bear without harm. In this way the nerves have strong enough resistance to carry the forces conducted into them. Father of my soul, I reply, what does it mean to conduct divine power into the body and to experience this power in the body? How can I learn to know and control this power in its physical manifestation? If that's how initiation begins and I must first go through this experience, then I'd like to do it immediately so that I can prepare myself for the higher initiation. Up to now Tahotep's divinely noble face has been as motionless as an alabaster statue, with only his eyes glowing brightly. But now at these words of mine the calm features of his face break out into a smile, while his eyes radiate even more light and more understanding. Immediately? He echoes. That is not possible, my child. To become conscious of divinely creative forces on the lowest level of the scale of manifestations means to experience physical love. You must wait until some young man appeals to you, until his positive manly radiation awakens your heart and makes it glow with negative feminine power. You must come to know this power of love, for unless you have this experience behind you, you cannot control it. It would always represent a constant temptation, involving the great danger of your falling to a much lower level of consciousness than the one you're on now. Father of my soul, I will never fall prey to physical love. Love is not a temptation for me, and I am not afraid of this danger because it really isn't a danger for me. Permit me, please, to be initiated. Tahotep turns quite serious again and says, my child, you only think that love could not be a danger for you because you do not know this tremendous force. To be courageous in the face of a danger we do not know is neither courage nor power, but only ignorance and weakness. Because of your lack of experience you do not know the temptation of love, and you believe you are able to face this force. But don't forget that love is also the manifestation of divine creative force and is therefore as strong as God himself. You cannot destroy this creative force, you could only transform it. But if you don't know this force, you can't know how it can be transformed. Be a good girl now and go home and wait till your destiny brings you this experience. When you have found out what love means in its full reality, when you have experienced it and clearly know what this force is, then you can come back and I will give you your initiation. At this I threw myself on my knees before him, embraced his feet and begged him desperately, "No, no, don't send me away, don't deny me initiation.